think by your authenticating, you know, this, the link, you know, I got a fax copy from Phil. He mailed it off to the Federation, so we might, you know, we may be able to get that document from the Federation. But I'm saying, with what we have right now, we're on the right
track. That's what I'm going to tell you. What we're going to have the most difficult, not only in music, politics, and social life.
Okay.
There's a gap between 1980 and I would say 1920. Because he was a very influential African American politician named Kid Bates.
Okay, okay.
The other approach was John Elmore, who had the Elmore Theater.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody, because they didn't research or don't know the right people, mm-hmm. nobody has ever said
done anything about
that. Just like this missing span between 8 and 20, 12 year span. Mm-hmm. And I know about it because he was instrumental in a lot of Washingtonians coming to Pittsburgh. He was an educator. He had a brother named Jimmy Bates, and he had a sister named Laura. My father used a woman, Laura Bates. And they were, the kid had died, but he was the first, I mean, and they don't have to. See, but you've got a bunch of people who have migrated.
The original
have been dead for years. I'm just lucky that I got an early start and was exposed to it. And now we will find something to hook that up, because some of the people that you're going to talk to, I'm going to tell you this, how does it take? Like Bill Gamble, but he used to play sax. Duke and him wouldn't have been going to his house at that time.
Well, when he says it, by his father being the secretary.
At that time, Duke didn't hit on the scene in Pittsburgh until about 1930. That's after when he made the movie Check and Double Check. He didn't get into New York until 1927.
Right.
And organize that band with Bubba Miley in it, mostly because the one that told me about that was Chris Colombo.
Okay.
Me and him sit down and had a long talk.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I was on the corner when Duke come. But see, Duke couldn't get along with Bubba Miley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bubba Miley would have been older than Benny Carter, because I read Benny Carter then when they played him with Trail Behind Him.
Right.
Something else I want to tell you in that era. There's an instrumentalist involved. The time that Duke would have been, he stayed at Keystone Artist's house, Wendell Arthur. His father was a frog at the post office. And them that didn't stay down, Pullman car. See, there's two cars to pull them off, and you could easily live there. But now, Duke's men didn't go to Bailey Hotel or Potter Hotel. They either stayed with prominent families.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at one time, over at Keystone Artist House, there was Juan Tezol, Joan Nanton, and Freddie Jenkins.
Yeah.
And people just opened up their arms to him. And he was in Stoney's band at that time.
Okay.
But like, you know, I know Bill. I can't recall when he played with Stoney Gloster, because I know the original band. I know who the replacement.
Yeah.
Then I played in that second band all the way up to a certain. And then I know who was the. See, a lot of them put yeast, but we're not about that.
I know.
We let that slide.
Yeah.
And
because like I said, the fact that his father came here in 1916.
That's when I was born.
Okay, and Gambrell was born after that. He said something about he was conceived in Texas, but he was born here in Pittsburgh. And when his father came here, and shortly thereafter, when his father, he and Gould and another guy, forget who he said, but they formed a union or were instrumental in bringing the union. But no. It might have been at one of its low ebbs, and they may have, you know, kind of resurged
it. Yeah, just like I said, that thing about Duke and Cab. Cab didn't get popular till 1929, and then he didn't come in here to, and I don't ever, I know that he was an E-flat piano player, and I made some gigs with him, but they didn't consider him on the level of performance.
So then he started singing and shaking his head, huh?
Yeah. See, he knows me, but I tell you something about that. It was always that color there. And what happened, I was instrumental in Stoney getting elected president. You know, the first thing, he looked over my, hey, Bill, I'd like for you to do some work around here. Duke's falling, I'd like. And he flopped. Now, I'm the guy
that got him in there.
Because I was the politician. And he flopped. He fell on his face. He didn't straighten Purnell and Prez and them out. Now, Brown, I would never see that he took any money. Like Purnell, Al Johnson. Well, see, we played in the Sophisticated Rhythm. Purnell and C. Horace told me when they was making the move out there, it was $1,700 in cash, supposedly under the care of Purnell. When they move out there, they don't see the money, they come back. Purnell said, I left that money right there. Horace telling me this. So,
well,
you care for the more coffee?
What year did he become president? Do you know?
I was it was in more than sure.
It 41, was in, 42?
No, 44.
Oh, 44.
44.
Okay. Okay, and he was there maybe about 7 or 8 years.
No. Stoney lasted about 2 years.
He
was full term.
Well, he was president when I joined, and I joined in 48. He was a president.
All right, this must have been around, around 46, because 46. I made the deal with Carl Arthur, and I thought Carl was going to be for the cause. As soon as Tony won, he said, well, you know, man, I said, it ain't about this. Well, you know, man, I got, and then he started trying to wheel and deal.
Because he became the next president.
After Stoney?
Yeah, when Stoney was a president, when we lost, you know, when we folded up down here, and then we would go to East Liberty, and Carl was president just for a short span, and then Joe Westray, and then we...
Did Joe become president?
Joe was president, and then just, we were losing the club out there. And then so Joe said, well, look, how about bringing it over to my place on Lincoln Avenue, his joint, you know? So we went over there. But I remember Brown and them, you know, they were a little reluctant, about going to Joe's, but why not? The man was offering us a place.
And you would have been in the street.
Sure.
Ruby was about to lose her house. And Carl and Duck. See, Carl always wanted to run a nightclub. What's your name? Roy Colbert. Set him up out there in a golf course. Benton Gardner came here. They was going to hold the National Negro Open. And when they come to check, they said in order for this to be competitive, there's 2 or 3 holes. He was busy trying to set up a nightclub and had Benton Gardner here with him. And then when the clock, Benton went away. Finally, he got somebody to back him. You know, he's like North America. He got that stolen moment.
But you know, when you were on the road, you know, like, what kind of groups did you play with? You know,
I played with the one group.
Oh, just one group?
Yeah. Joe Webb, the name was Joe Webb. And we were backing Big Maybelle. That's what she made that. Hey, Lordy Mama. Yeah. And Naptown Boogie with Christine. When I got with the band, Christine wasn't with him. Now, Andy had been with him. Since 1943. That's the only reason I joined. I left January 1945, and I come back to Pittsburgh to stay in December, on December the 17th.
Okay.
But I met a lot of guys. Most of my band was really, I was what you might call a freelance. Mm-hmm. It was a band come here named Burns County out of Chicago. And they got the gig at Javel's Jungle. When that gig pulled, they had played you one more time.
Yeah.
When that gig pulled, they had played some gigs. I played a show with them for Larry Steele Review.
Yeah.
And they played, I went down Cincinnati with them. We took a weekend tour, and I played with them for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And Linton Garner wound up playing with us for 38. That was the last of an era. Joe Marshall got a break on the Godfrey show. He was their drummer, and that told him to use me. Because, see, Art was with a little group with bass and them, Shorty Murray and them. And during that year is when Fletcher come through and needed a band. So he got a band attacked, and he fronted it. Yeah. I get it. That's why we have another call. Now, I don't live too far from here, but I will have a call, number between 2 and 2:30.
No problem.
Now look, can I, would you fix out a questionnaire of the information you wanted to know, and I can give it to this guy to take up to his father, rather than have him come down for breakfast? However you want to do it. See, what I want to know from you, when I call you and tell you, it's set up for such and such a morning here at Johnny's, and I'll have the girl here to take the picture. I won't be in it, no way. But see, this is an outpost. You're linking up with musicians.
Right.
Union and all you.
Right.
That were instrumental.
And they were all part of the pit.
Hook them up.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
You can hook them up.
Yeah, well, I can do that. I can...
Because what I want to do is have at least 3 pictures of you doing research. And that will see, we want, I can't say we, I would like to see at least 4 pages.
I just kind of, I hit $7.
Includes a picture of the history of. We want to be, Andy used to tell me, I wasn't in the union, when they had the convention here, he told me the area is. That they occupy, that there was continuous music all day long. They had the different bands and whatnot. All right, if be necessary, within us, we can get some kind of, Ruby got an organ, we can get some kind of thing, if it's left, but it's not a convention. But we want documents.
Yeah.
Hey, Melissa. We want the documents.
Yeah.
And since you're the researcher, I just verified and supplied that. I want you to get the due credit. And it would be good if you'd be seeing pictures of you
interviewing
people from different areas. Yeah. Because Western Pennsylvania, part of West Virginia, is high, it was amalgamated. And that's the birth of it. See, but there's a missing gap in the way of life here in Pittsburgh between 1908 and 1920, 12 years. And sometimes I might just on my own research that.
Because
I know of these people.
Most of the guys don't even think about that period of time. You know, like,
I had to think about it because...
You were there.
Yeah, and I knew about it. See, I had an uncle. The youngest of my grandmother's 3 boys. He was an animal. And that was so bad, he had to come to Pittsburgh. Well, naturally, he had Bates do our family look at him, but wound up getting shot. And I'll tell you why. Those who represented Johnny Elmore out the hill, and then it was down the hill. He was such a fierce guy that they drawn straws. And he was coming from Washington Park with a football He was coming from Washington Park with the football. But to show you how strong Kid Bates was, The guy Braxton had to do 20 years. Hmm. Normally, if it wasn't for that thing, he would have got away with it. As influential as Johnny Elmore was, Elmore Square was named after him. Yeah. He was the boss of the neighborhood. And I happened to see her. I said, I guess I'll speak to her. I said, hello, Mrs. Hughes. She said, right here. She said, yeah.
But it's, you know, it was like, I've been waiting for, like, a public opportunity to, you know, where we would be playing, where I could invite some people to hear the band, you know.
But you know, I thought, it's real cheap. You know, I'm paying the for them.
Yeah.
I will go there more often when I see people who I know.
Well, maybe a couple weeks from now, on another Monday night, we'll go out and you can hear this other band, the Balcony Band. Now, they've been here for 10
John
years.
John Wilkes.
No. The Balcony Band, the house band of that joint.
Yeah.
See, John plays there on occasions.
Dr.
John.
Well, now the house band, do you know who the drummer is? Is that H.P. Bennett?
H.P. Bennett. See, that's the band.
And he's an old timer,
doing it. No, kid. They're all young. They're all youngsters. Yeah. And the bass player that was with us, he had formerly been with that band, see, when they started. Mm-hmm. But they don't pay no money over there, see.
Yeah.
H.P. is related to whoever owns the joint.
Mm-hmm.
So they worked out a deal. First, it was just a place for them to rehearse.
Yeah.
And then, It became a thing, well, why don't we, you know, play on a Monday night as a regular, and we'll do it cheaply.
Yeah.
So they just set up. That's how they did it. So they've been there.
That's about a $50 gig.
$25, what you talking about? I didn't pay $25 over there. That's why nobody wants to, you know, they really don't want to play it. But for us, it was good because that was our first public exposure.
Except for that.
Yeah.
Great band.
Yeah, it's a good band.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean,
there's only two of us.
Yeah.
But I know the two of us know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
The first thing Warren Watson said, I heard, you know, we were going to try to get a band together. And we found the only one to read music was Chuck Carson. And that tells me that that Horace, who's messing around with all them instruments, he don't do no reading.
No, not really. I mean, you know, he'll take a... You know, a piano sheet, a lead sheet, you know, and he'll look at it and read the chords and that.
Yeah.
And he'll claim he's reading, but the horse comes
in. And then on his trumpet.
It ain't happening.
No. See, you got your embouchure is the most important thing.
See, I know how this is going to
take. You know, I'm going to tell you something. This is the first time I ever heard and saw when I went down to that concert, Cecil Brooks III.
Oh, he's
playing.
Right.
Now I know Cecil.
Yeah.
And he went up to New York and connected.
His son could play.
Yeah.
Young Brooks could play.
Yeah. I watched him and looked at him.
Yeah, but it was an interesting evening, though.
See, I've taken in two of your things, four things, because normally I don't go out.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall John saying to me, I said, I'm willing to share information because whatever I do, that's my own person.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, well, then you're serious. I wonder if he thought I was just stringing him along, you know? But man, I'm so happy and proud of you. This needs to be done.
Yeah,
and to do that, I said, I'm going to see that you get your property, man. I know how to go about getting that put in all of these schools, and then other areas will be wanting.
Well, see, a guy called me. Did you get a call from a guy from New York asking you about
something? No, see, I don't have no connection.
Okay. Well, anyway, a guy, see, Raymond, my mother married Raymond Woods.
Yeah.
Now, he grew up with Earl Garner and Billy Stahelman.
Yes.
He's, I guess Raymond right now would be, if he lived, he'd probably be late 80s.
Yeah.
Late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy, in writing this book on Billy Strayhorn, he found somewhere around 1934, somewhere in that period of time, that John Raymond Wood and Strayhorn had collaborated on some music. And John wrote the wood. Raymond wrote the words, and then he also the lyrics, and he also had a copyright. You know, and it's in his name.
Yeah.
So the guy, he was trying to find out who was this John Raymond Woods. So then one word, and he called. He finally hooked up with a family member, and that's Joyce. And she called me to ask me if I knew anything. Well, Joyce didn't even know that Raymond played saxophone. He played C melody saxophone.
Yeah, C melody.
Yeah.
That
see, that's what popped up the horn in those
and
days.
I'll check with the Harrisons because they were supposed to get me a picture of Charlie Dodson.
Okay.
And you know where a lot of my information comes from about them guys? Mr. Turrentine, because I played in Stoney's band for 2 years.
That's another thing, because I had a prayers book, Lester Young book.
Yeah.
And in there was a picture, and a Turrentine was in this picture with prayers, and I'm wondering whether that was Stan Raymond's dad.
No, Turrentine didn't even come out.
Okay. He just played locally here. Did he play?
Stoney's band, and when that finally broke up, he went out and started marching with the Greater Pittsburgh Elks band.
But he didn't do that much locally in town.
No, he didn't do no gigging. No gigging. After he left that band, he was out of it.
Because I didn't, you know, I remember him playing when Stanley first, you know, came on the scene because Stanley had to wait for his dad to come in with the saxophone so he could go play.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I did a couple of things with Stanley in the early days.
Yeah. See, that's why I say I'm not familiar with Stanley because he was being born.
Right. Because he didn't come around until the 60s.
But when mother was carrying him, Tommy was a little boy.
Yeah.
And Milton used to say, they better keep the eye on Tommy because he's running around telling her, Mommy's going to have a watermelon. I know the guy that was the cause of Tommy playing trumpet, Robert Yeager McKenzie. And he left and became a Canadian. And Tommy told me that he had the same influence on Maynard Ferguson. And I've been up in Canada, Montreal, and met some dudes because the Buffalo dudes
used to go over there.
Yeah.
Right, used to go over there. Yeah. It's good, man.
Yeah. Hey, you take care. I'm going to take care of
this. You get ready to go?
Yeah.
All right.
But, hey,